I plan out our whole day. First, we'll make snow angels for 2 hours, and then we'll go ice skating, and then we'll eat a whole roll of Toll House cookie dough as fast as we can, and then, to finish...
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Yesterday, I opened the broadcast with some of the shocking new stats from the CDC on teen and even younger child suicides during this whole COVID shutdown. It is so tragic. And when we talk about reopening the schools, I always get these people, usually quite profane, who text in, "You bleeping idiot! You want to reopen the schools and kill the kids!" And what all of those profane people fail to acknowledge, refuse to acknowledge, is that keeping kids home is killing them in record numbers. It is absolutely killing our children. And we're seeing that from the suicide rates, the drug overdose rates, from every bit of evidence. The COVID, as Dr. Anthony Fauci even acknowledged last weekend, kids do not transmit it child to child. They do not transmit it child to adult. There are exceptions, but in general. But what we know for certain is that our kids are dying. Suicide rate up 30% among 14 to 18-year-olds this year in America. We just got a bunch of lost souls. And this is as sad as it gets, this story. Let's get into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
This is the story of an 11-year-old in California who was on a Zoom class when he took his own life. KTLA reported.
Candles fill a neighborhood driveway lit for a young life lost. San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office says an 11-year-old Woodbridge Elementary School student took his own life while on a Zoom call with his classroom. Discovered by his own sister, who immediately told her teacher over Zoom, then ran to a neighbor for help.
How long are we going to keep this going? When kids are dying, and many of them, we've got family domestic violence skyrocketing, divorces skyrocketing. A lot of men and women apparently can't stand being around each other 24/7 as they're both working from home. My wife and I are both working from home. I love it. It's great. I haven't had a problem. But our kids are having problems. This isn't natural. This isn't normal for kids to not have any outlets. They don't have their extracurriculars, sports, band, drama, things that keep them connected. Can't go to their friend's house to visit. Their friends can't come over to their house to visit. How long are we going to keep this up? And by the way, there are other stories in the news today besides that California boy. He shot himself in the middle of his Zoom class. The teachers are apparently cracking up as well. A high school teacher from Staten Island, New York, was on a video conference Monday, naked and pleasuring himself. According to law enforcement sources, the teacher works at Tottenville High School. It occurred during a Google Meet call. And people started reporting that the teacher was naked and pleasuring himself. The City Department of Education spokeswoman said, "This extremely disturbing alleged behavior has absolutely no place in our schools." Oh, bravo. Take a stand. "And was immediately reported to the NYPD. The teacher was immediately reassigned away from students, meaning it's still getting paid. He did not get fired for naked pleasuring on a video call. Pending the outcome of an investigation. And then, you know, you got the media. That guy who's the legal analyst for CNN, Jeffrey Toobin. He exposed himself and was seen pleasuring himself during a Zoom call with his colleagues at the New Yorker magazine and WNYC radio. They at first suspended him, but then they fired him. And Toobin said, "I made an embarrassingly stupid mistake. Mistake? Believing I was off camera." Well, first of all, you can see the framing on your computer screen. Secondly, you should not do that in the middle of a business conference video call. A mistake. Oopsie daisies. "I apologize to my wife, my family, my friends, and my coworkers." And CNN still hasn't fired him. He's suspended, but the New Yorker has. But he remains the chief legal analyst at CNN. CNN said, "We've granted him some time off while he deals with a personal issue." The whole world's going crazy. But government's got us under control. Don't leave your home. Don't go anywhere. Don't do anything. And do you hear the mayor of Los Angeles? He gave one of the most adamant speeches yet on controlling us.
"It's time to hunker down. It's time to cancel everything. And if it isn't essential, don't do it. Don't meet up with others outside your household. Don't host a gathering. Don't attend a gathering. And following our targeted safer at home order, if you're able to stay home, stay home. Just be smart and stay apart."
Mm-hmm. That's Eric Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles. And again, I'm doing all of these things. I am hunkered down. I'm being very careful. I need to be. I have never explained why I need to be, but I need to be. Okay, there's some stuff. But I don't need government to tell me that. I can do it without government. And somebody who's 30, 40 years old in peak perfect health does not need to be shut down and controlled by government. Which brings me to what is up next here in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I got an email from listener Adam that I wanted to share with you. "Well, Dory, the COVID nonsense has finally hit home. My dad was recently diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and is nearing the end of his life. We've been doing our best to keep him home, but inpatient hospice care is unavailable given his home situation. We're here saying our goodbyes in the middle of a bustling VA ER room, knowing that once he goes into hospice care, we will not be permitted to visit him. He will die alone, with no one there to hold his hand or comfort him. Why? Because of this dogmatic approach to dealing with COVID. It is not about using facts to make decisions. The way we're handling this defies logic and simply following dictates and rules that are less about affecting results and more about following contrived rules. It's to the point that no one is questioning anything. They're just eating what they're fed by the media and our politicians. I call them sheeple. At any rate, my father will die alone and without the comfort of his loved ones. This is exactly how no one deserves to spend their last days. This is purely disposable. It's purely despicable. Glad you're back. Please keep fighting to be our voice. Much love, Adam. Adam, God bless you and your family. You were in my prayers this morning, you and your dad and your family. It doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't we allow a family to be with a parent in their dying days? They're afraid that dad, who has pancreatic cancer, is going to get COVID. I mean, what sense does this make? This isn't about public health. This isn't about safety. This is about control. This is what I've been saying for a long, long time. This is purely about control. Conditioning us for what is still to come. Because, as I've said, especially if the Democrats win control of the Senate, your mind's going to be blown. As Joe Biden has two key hires now who have both said they are for forced gun takeaways by government. Now, once the people are trained properly, then they can do that, right? Yeah, good luck. Good luck with the gun owners. Sending law enforcement to mandatory buyback guns. Good luck with that. But these are the goals. In our state, they want a state income tax that violates our state constitution. But if the people get trained well enough to be controlled and to accept everything that we're served up, well, then it gets a lot easier to do things that are extra constitutional, like a state income tax. They're holy grail. Do I believe that they're leaving seniors to die alone with pancreatic cancer for the crass reason of putting through a state income tax? Yeah, I do. I certainly don't think that they are morally above that. I've seen nothing to suggest anything that's moral about what's happening. And as I said, people can make their own choices. I would live my life exactly the same if government wasn't mandating what they are. I'd still wear masks in the store. I would still resist having get-togethers. But again, when my healthy 26, 27-year-old daughters who live with roommates and see friends and go out on Fridays and Saturdays, am I upset that they're being social? No. Because I know if they get COVID, they'll be fine. I know that they're exposing themselves to risk. But, you know, it's been really sweet. They are going to shut down social activities 2 weeks before Christmas. They're going to take a test, make sure they don't have it. And then a week before Christmas, they're going to come here and hunker down with us. And since we didn't have Thanksgiving together, and we don't need government to tell us how to live our lives. We're all doing just fine without government trying to control every aspect of our lives. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
How about these two women who have been charged with a terrorist attack in our states for trying to crash trains together? Samantha Francis Brooks and Ellen Brecken Reike have been arrested and charged with terrorist attack for interfering with train tracks in our state. They're accused of placing a shunt on a railroad track. And a shunt is just a piece of wire, and it passes low voltage electricity from one side of the track to the other. And that replicates what happens when a train passes over the track. It can cause other trains to nearby to brake automatically, thinking there's a train in their way. It can cause rail crossing signals to not operate properly. It can create head-on collision possibilities. It can create all kinds of dangers. These two women are 23 and 27 years old. And they placed multiple shunts in Whatcom and Skagit counties, caused one train to emergency brake. The force of that caused a failure between the bar that couples trains together. The train separated into two unconnected parts. Could have caused a derailment. You're probably wondering, what's the background of these two women? Well, one of them was a Democrat campaigner in our state. She was a field operative for the Democratic Party here in Washington. And when I tell you that not all Democrats are extremist leftist whack jobs, there are a lot of people probably listening to my show right now who are Democrats, who are good, solid, moral, family people. So not all Democrats are whack job terrorists, but what's become mainstream Democratic Party here in Western Washington has been dominated by whack job terrorists or terrorist aider and abettors. And I'm talking about the Seattle City Council. We've had domestic terrorists in the city for months and months and months. Going to private homes, tagging homes, throwing Molotov cocktails into police cars and into private businesses, not worrying who's on the other side of that window that they're throwing it through. And our Seattle City Council, they have become those insane whack jobs. When, who's the councilwoman who stood there giving a speech while a guy on a megaphone was telling cops, was standing right next to her telling cops to put their gun to their head and shoot themselves, and she didn't stop them? She didn't care? She put up with it? So here you go again. Two terrorists in our state, or alleged terrorists. The FBI is on this. And one of the women is a deputy field organizer for Washington State Democrats. Not all Democrats are whack jobs. But, oh, man. The people who are driving the policies that are destroying our region, they are whack jobs, and they are within the party. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're going to check the news for you, and then coming up, if you missed it, I told you at the beginning of the show, story that, shockingly, I've not heard anywhere else in the local media. We now have evidence that coronavirus was here not in late January, as everybody has been telling us. It was here as early as November of 2019. And our local politicians literally did nothing. Details straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. It is interesting, man. I talked about something at the beginning of the show today. And looking at the text messages that were coming in at 12:10, 12:15, as I was talking about this, dozens and dozens of people say, well, that explains a lot. This is a story. I'm gonna talk about it again here because, frankly, I can't believe that I have not seen this covered in the local media. We now have proof that coronavirus came to our state not in late January with that first patient at a Kirkland nursing home. But months earlier, as early as November, and at the beginning of the show, I was talking to Nicole, because Nicole, when the coronavirus first came out, Nicole said, I think that's what I had in November, because she was so sick and it just wouldn't go away. And you know, we were in the studio together for how many weeks was that, Nicole, that you were really sick, but you kept working?
It was the beginning of November it started, and then I finally kicked it after Thanksgiving. So it was almost the full month of November.
Yeah, it just wouldn't go away. And you couldn't stop coughing. You got tested for pneumonia. You got tested for everything else.
Bronchitis.
And they could not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could not figure out. Yeah, bronchitis. What it was. And Dave Wyman, after coronavirus, you know, became news in the spring, he goes, I swear that's what my wife and I had back in November, because Dave and his wife were the sickest they had ever been. And now we have evidence that I don't know if for certain if Nicole had it. I don't know for certain if Dave and his wife had it. But we know for certain now that coronavirus was in our state. And honestly, I can't believe nobody else in the local media
is picking up on this. Well, I have to say, Dory, I don't know that it's that they're not covering it. It's just kind of getting buried. So I've heard it a couple places, you know, oh, it might have been here back in December. But they don't explain that they think this because of blood tested for antibodies, and antibodies don't form until a week or two later after you've recovered from it. And so really that means it was here in November, and so it's just not being explained.
Yeah, and so I would like to try to explain this, because I first heard about this, and I will always give attribution, on Tucker Carlson's show last night. And this was so incredible to me that I immediately did a Google News search to see, is anybody covering this? And there was a little blip in the New York Times, and not much else. CNN might have had something, but here's what was reported.
The latest evidence comes from samples collected during Red Cross blood drives last year and now analyzed by the Centers for Disease Control. In a study published on Monday, researchers tested 39 blood samples from the states of California, Washington, and Oregon. That blood was collected between December 13th and December 16th, 2019. At the time, no one in the United States had heard of COVID-19. The Chinese government didn't even acknowledge its existence until December 31st. And yet every one of those samples just tested has come back positive for the coronavirus antibodies. All of them.
Okay, and I need to correct Tucker Carlson on that. It was not every one of the samples tested, but it was 9%. And that still is a staggering number. Because people who give blood tend to be a little bit younger and healthier. And 9% of the samples collected between December 13th and 19th, were finally tested by the CDC this summer. Why didn't they think to do it before that? And 9% tested positive for the antibodies for COVID-19. And as Nicole just said, that means they had the coronavirus at least a couple weeks earlier, which moves it back into November. And it opens up the possibility that my friends who swear they had the coronavirus in November of last year because it was the sickest they've ever been, they may have been right about that. It also, you know, makes me wonder, because Nicole, I don't think you took one sick day that month, did you?
No, I've actually never taken a sick day until just recently.
Yeah. And so you and I shared... Yeah, you and I shared a studio, so we were in the close. Our desks were right next to each other. We're a few feet apart in the studio, a very enclosed space, and because we want soundproof doors, it's kind of hermetically sealed, the radio studios. And so I just wonder if I was exposed to you for every day for 1 month solid, and if you did indeed have it, did I get it and just was, you know, what's the word? Asymptomatic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me wonder. So I want to get tested for that again. I did a blood test a few months ago, and they said, yeah, you may have antibodies, but it's inconclusive. And I want to, I don't know what that even means. So now that I know what I know, so why weren't our politicians protecting us a little bit better? Well, first of all, they didn't even test these blood samples until summertime. But also, our politicians, especially our local elected officials, they had something much more important on their mind than the possibilities of a pandemic that would go on to kill 225,000 Americans. On January 24th, the Trump administration had a security briefing for every member of the Senate on coronavirus. 14 of the 100 senators showed up. 86 did not. Now, why wouldn't they talk about a pandemic that was becoming increasingly evident as, you know, cataclysmic? Well, they were very worried about something else. And so I mentioned that last night I did a C-SPAN. Their video archives are pretty good. And I did a C-SPAN search. And my search term was Patty Murray, January 2020, coronavirus. Zero hits. Maria Cantwell, 2020, coronavirus. Zero hits. Our senators had nothing to say. Even after the White House briefing on January 24th. But they were talking about something else. Because here's what popped up for their names in January of 2020. Patty Murray was thinking about impeaching the president.
I think it's important to take a minute and step back and look at the pivotal moment that we are now in. House managers provided an ironclad case. It was thorough. It was driven by the facts, and it was very compelling. And it painted a very chilling picture of something our founding fathers deeply feared.
No, it didn't. It was a partisan witch hunt. It was your little fantasy, your leftist fantasy of impeaching the president. Never had a chance in the Senate, even though the Democrat House. How about Maria Cantwell?
Election interference is the issue of our day. It's not because we just spent 11 days talking about it and...
Oh, they spent 11 days talking about impeaching the president. So while a pandemic that apparently had been here for months began to rage, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell could only think about impeaching a president because they hated an election that happened 3 years earlier. And that tells you pretty much everything you need to know about Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell as stewards of public health and safety. Coming up next, countdown of favorite sound bites of the day, awesome audio on the Dory Monson Show. Oh my goodness, I am still hearing from dozens and dozens of people who say this explains a lot of why they were so sick in November and December of 2019, early January of 2020, before anybody knew COVID-19 was here in our country. And so I'm glad the story is coming to light and answering a lot of questions. One woman who's an ER nurse texted me and said, we knew that something was going on. We could not figure out what it was. And so a lot of people starting to get some answers here. This is the time of day when I like to count down my favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Donald Trump, after we got off the air yesterday, released a 46-minute video. He said it was the most important speech he'd ever given that detailed election fraud. It's being dismissed as crackpot by most in the media.
Led to a big part of the fraud a fraud that the whole world is watching, and there is no one happier right now than China. Many people received 2, 3, and 4 ballots. They were sent to dead people by the thousands. In fact, dead people, and we have many examples, filled out ballots, made applications, and then voted, which is even worse. In other words, dead people went through a process. Some have been dead for 25 years.
Now, after Trump released this, I saw all the headlines that said, Trump makes more unsubstantiated claims. Now, Trump made claims, but I know a lot about numbers and statistics. He got 65 million votes in 2016. He got 74 and won easily in the Electoral College with 65 million. He got 74 million votes in 2020. There is no way that Joe Biden legitimately got more than 74 million votes. There's just simply no way, legitimately. And that's what makes all the headlines. Unsubstantiated claims. If you know anything about statistics, about probability, you know that we're talking about a grain of sand on a beach where the odds of Joe Biden getting as many votes as have been assigned to him. There was no excitement about him, no enthusiasm. And I know there was some dislike for Trump, but there wasn't that much that it would blow up this election the way it did. So all these headlines are ridiculous. I don't think Trump's going to flip the election, but he's making claims. There's actually a lot of substantiation behind the claims. And then there's this. There's a guy that I don't know his name, but he's posing as one of the tech elitists. You know, the Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerbergs of the world. And he's telling you and me all about the elitists who control us these days.
Whoever controls the media controls the population, and that's us. We're the elite. We control the media, and therefore we control you. I can assure you, we the elite are not motivated by money. Even though there's just a few of us and we own nearly all of it, we're not motivated by money. We wouldn't stoop to that level. Money's a poor man's currency. We're motivated by control, specifically by controlling people.
I still love that line. Money is a poor man's currency. That's a great line.
If you thought it was a thrill to make a bunch of money, just wait until you have control over a bunch of actual people. It's way more thrilling. Like, you know how you love your family and how you do anything for them? Yeah, well, that's how we feel about control. We love it. And we just want control over everyone and everything. Think about it this way. Have you ever been in a relationship with a really controlling person? You know how awful that can feel? So you can imagine how much better it feels to be the person who's doing the controlling in the relationship. So that's what we're trying to do in our relationship with everybody. We love being in control. It feels so good to us. That's why we make up rules to protect people. They clearly don't, because they're not designed to protect people. They're engineered to give us control over people. Like a 10 p.m. curfew? Think about that. I can assure you that one's not because COVID's nocturnal.
Oh, it's good stuff. The elites who control us. Okay, I'm out of here. Tom and Curly are coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. Let's get back together tomorrow. High noon.
You did it! Congratulations! Great job, everybody.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.